This podcast is powered by Tequila Fortaleza, handmade in small batches and hands down my favorite tequila. It's Michael Emery. Thanks for tuning in to Slow Baja. My heaping dose of gratitude this week goes out to Lynn Chenneth. We had the pleasure of staying at the Chenneth Legacy Lodge while on the Baja XL rally, and Lynn roused his good friend, his high school buddy, Johnny Johnson, and got him to come down to the lodge to talk to us on Slow Baja, and I am just delighted to share this show with you. I had Kaiser, that's right, Kaiser, my podcast producer, was shooting film, and we were out under a palapa at the beach, and man, what a spot. Well, I'm not going to wax on any further, because Johnny Johnson, he's a great storyteller, and I'm going to let him do the talking. So without further ado, Johnny Johnson on Slow Baja. As a legend racer yourself, Johnny, and I hate to even start with that phrase, but you get a guy like Bob Bondurant, who went down Le Mans at 200 plus in the rain at night. Like, as a driver and a damn fine driver like yourself, how do you respect other people who did that stuff in those days and did it at the highest level like he did?
In the Plimpton special that I did with George,
1971.
He goes to England and gets involved with Jackie Stewart,
right,
on the Formula One team. And in the interview, Plimpton asks him that same question. And he says, speed doesn't exist for a race car driver. It only exists when something goes wrong.
Wow.
He says, like walking through your living room day after day, it all looks the same until somebody moves the chair.
And then you trip
over
it.
Yeah, fall over there. You know, and it was just like, okay, I can, you know.
Well, I'm going to get us introduced here. It's Slow Baja. We're at the beautiful Chenneth Legacy Lodge in Persibu, and I'm with the living legend, Johnny Johnson, and I'm just delighted that you made some time for us. And I've got Christopher Kaiser here on the camera, making the sound good. We are recording. Yes, we are. And Johnny, good morning, amigo.
Hi, how are you doing?
Now, you weren't going to meet me until 10 because they don't legally sell beer here at the Chenneth Lodge until 10 a.m., but I'm glad you came in a little early. It's 9:15.
Yeah, well, I have stash at home. I didn't think I'd be out of bed yet.
Well, Lynn...
Sore throat.
Yeah, Lynn kicked you out of bed to come talk to me, and I really appreciate it, so thank you. I'm telling your story, so I'm glad we jumped into it already with Bob Bondurant and the Bondurant School of Driving. How'd you get started? I know you and Lynn went to high school together, and you were building cars as a teenager.
In Spring Valley, San Diego County, my neighbor bought Burl Ben Okatoo Wells Cafe, and that was just turning into an off-road mega. Nobody had buggies yet, and I went out there. Well, come on out to Okatoo Wells with me. It was great. I loved the desert, but I didn't like walking. You couldn't take a car anywhere, you know. So I went. I came home, and my grandma gives me a 49 straight eight Packard.
Wow.
Took the body off of it. This motor is this long and four cylinder over the front wheel. We cut the frame short and it fell over on the front like a wheelbarrow. Well, this isn't going to work real good. So we shortened it, put the seats in the gas tank, hauled it, me and Mike to Tacoma. He was up coming in Tacoma wheels and frames and trailers, and you couldn't drive down the beach at all. You just get stuck. So I went to the wreck yard and bought a for core with a rod sticking out the block, a V8 Oldsmobile overhead valve engine, about one of them 900 pound guys, chained it in the back. solve the problem.
Okay. Just added some weight.
Yeah. So we ran around. I did that for probably about 3 trips. And everybody says, hey, there's some sand dunes over at Superstitions over there. And that's, I says, let's run over there. It's about 25 miles. Sure. Well, I'd never been in sand dunes. And I didn't know, you know, they go up and they drop off. They go up and they drop off. Or the other way, it's up and smooth, up and smooth. I just know I need some speed. And I looking at, like, the house there, going up this one dune, and all air. The dune just dropped off. And it goes sailing through the air, comes down and goes, bam, and it breaks in 4 spots.
How lessons were learned.
And the seat fell off backwards in the roll bar. The motor fell off that way, and the center landed. And we all looked at it and tried to figure out what to do. We took the battery out of it and left it. And never found it ever in 40, 50 years. I've gone by that same spot, and it's under a sand dune somewhere.
Disappeared.
Yeah. You know? But so then I decided to build a buggy and auto shop. And that's when me and Lynn ran into each other.
And that's when they still had auto shop, kids.
Yeah.
If you've never heard that phrase before put together, auto shop was a class in high school where you got to work with your hands and build stuff.
So, and the hour before that, we had metal shop. So we could build the bracket, take it over to auto shop and weld it on.
So Johnny has spent a lot of years racing in the desert and has inhaled an awful lot of dust. And like you folks who love the sound of my voice, which is all dust and tequila, Johnny's got a little COPD that he's dealing with today. So he's apologized. He's going to cough a few times. And I'm delighted you're here. And I'm delighted you're making some time for Slow Baja.
Well, thank you very much.
So
it's
we're gonna have a cough here and there, and I'm sipping a little coffee with some Fortaleza Reposado. That's what's keeping my voice smooth this morning. So you built a buggy. You built a buggy. Lynn was the grade below you, as I understand.
No, he was. We were both.
You're
seniors.
The same grade.
I was back a grade.
You're back a grade. All right.
So I go out and. I'm working at the bowling alley right there in Castro, and Lynn's building street racing headers for a living. There was no off-road racing yet. And so we got run around, and I finally, come on, you got to go out to Glamis. So I go out to Glamis, see the big sand dunes, and I went, whoa, and it was just all kinds of Volkswagen Pans running around. You know, they just took the body off and driving them around. So I took Lynn out there, and it was a slingshot buggy where the rear wheels were in front of you, and you could just pop a wheelie and go forever. And Lynn, me and him drunk, and just playing in the sand dunes. And he goes, you know, I got a tubing bender and a flame table. He says, I could build a two-wheeler frame for this. And there we go.
Yeah, that led to a few things. So that buggy, that first one you built, it was the wheelie king. He said you could ride a wheelie, you could pop thing and just go all day. Mm-hmm. And everybody was looking at you.
You get up and the wind would stop you.
And everybody was looking at you like, what? What's with this guy?
Just goofing off, you know.
Just goofing off.
So then I wanted a bigger motor, and I put a big turbocharged board and stroke Corvair on it for the hill climbs. It would just blow the Volkswagen gearbox apart. And so I put a Corvair gearbox in it and had axles made out to Volkswagen suspension. So I've been improving. Now I can dump the clutch at 7,000, not hurt anything.
Wow.
And just burn up the hill. So when off-road racing starts, I mean, well, shit, I know how to do this.
And so that's what I was going to ask you. At what year were you in high school? What year did you graduate?
62.
And it's an assumption that you graduate. I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
So 62, the first off-road race is 5 years away.
Yeah.
So you've got 5 years to train goofing off in the desert, building tube frame vehicles, getting Corvairs and what. How did you approach that first race?
It was my boss, Johnny Jones at Action Auto Parts, ran the 67,000, and I kind of helped him and stuff. Cindy comes back and he says, off-road racing is going to take off. He says, I'm going to put on the Brego Rough 100 at Ocotillo Hills. And we'll go from Okotoks, Salton Sea, Superstitions, and Bat. I said, okay, that sounds cool. Well, so now, you know, it's three classes, four-cylinder, six-cylinder, and eight-cylinder. Whatever you had, you got in that line, and then that was your starting number.
We're keeping it simple.
So it was a $15 entry fee, and I won it, $1,000. And I went, whoa, wait a minute. You know, what is this stuff, you know? So I built a legal Nora frame with that $1,000. There was a roll cage, just not one bar behind you, you know? And ran the 68,000, same running gear, everything. And it was like cheating. The 1,600 Volkswagens just came out. So they were all going down the highway at 60 miles an hour. And I... 100 miles an hour was only 4,000 on the tag.
Wow.
I could cruise right to 120. Wow. And I see the straw Broncos and shit, and I just blow right by them. And they're going, what is this buggy doing?
And so for you, it was basically a study in lightweight. You figured out that lighter is faster. So you got in those days, they were building stuff they were basically tanks. It was like your 49 yeah. Packard from yeah. your grandma.
Yeah.
It's like they're building tanks to beat up the desert. But you figured out, hey, if you do something that's lightweight, lower horsepower number makes it faster. You were able to do 120, which was trophy truck territory.
You know, and it's made it long and low.
Long and low.
And everybody else was shortening them, Volkswagen to like 88 inches for Myers Manx. Well, I was lengthening them.
Interesting.
I was 104 or something like that right off the bat.
Where did you go mentally to slow down enough to win? You know, you get Parnelli Jones. Okay, legendary driver. He's won Indy. But it took him a long time to slow down enough to not break what he had to win in Baja.
I didn't have... The 68,000 was a $250 entry fee, and they gave you free Chevron white pump gasoline at every checkpoint. So you needed no pit crew.
Okay.
The only thing you had to have was gas. So my buddy helped me build the car, and we just packed a few little parts that we could in the thing. A bead breaker to break the bead down in an inner tube and a boot for the rear tire. Didn't even have a spare anywhere down. And because you couldn't get anything down, there's no road.
Right.
And so just trying not to hurt the car. If I break the car, there's no radios to come get me. You know, there's nothing. You're just like, yeah. You're history until a farmer comes by. And so that took the edge way off. And I think also it helped. It was my old sand buggy motor. And I had wrapped the exhaust pipe going to the turbo with tinfoil to hold the heat. I'm not 6 miles out of the instant on, and I blow a little hole in it. And my turbo pressure went from 10 down to 4. And just, it was like putting a governor on me. You know, and
so slower became faster because you didn't brake.
We're racing with the automobile club map.
Explain that. Explain that. So you got the AAA map, and you're trying to race and.
Well, he's looking going this way, and I knew from just looking at it, I had never been to Ensenada before, that I wanted to stay the ocean all the way to El Rosario, then we're going to go inland. Well, 8 miles out of Ensenada, it was the road to Bufador, the blowhole, the paved road there. I hit that sucker at about 90 and take off the blowhole.
Taking the scenic route, folks. Taking the scenic route.
And going along, all of a sudden, I got red lights and blue lights and shit coming, kept running me down. And I look down, I'm going about 120. I go, holy shit.
You're meeting the local constable.
Yes. And they pull up beside me and he goes, no, senora, this way. Turns around, and I followed him back at 120, right into the intersection, and on my way.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay.
So 100-plus career victories?
112. Through all, I think the Parker 400 I've won it 15 times, the Baldwin 1000 15 times, the Barstow 250s and 400s and Baja 500s and San Felipe 250s all add up in there.
That's astonishing.
But the record I'm most proud of is I won the Baja 1000 8 times and never got out of the seat of the car.
So you drove the whole time. You changed navigators.
Get out.
Yeah, you didn't get out.
Didn't even get out of the seat. You know, throw a hair of gas and go. And some of them are single seaters.
We're going to take a minute right there and let that sink in. We're going to take a break. Holy Toledo, 8 times and never got out of the car in the Baja 1000.
How many hours was that?
How many hours? Exactly. How many hours was that?
24 to 27. And then me and Bobby Farrow teamed up the next year and knocked it down to 1645, beat the bikes by 45 minutes. And nobody could believe it. We both raced for Sam Astor. And Bobby Farrow was by far the fastest guy. But he would always get in the dust and crash. He had no patience to get to wait till he could go. And so Scott McKenzie and Don Arnett said, okay, John, you start. And we started a rear number in class one. So when I get to the front, we know where everybody is. And because there's still no radios. You know, so once you're the lead car on the road, you know you're cool if you're the last one to start.
You've passed everybody ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah, and so I got out of Los Angeles, put Bobby in, and I says, the car is perfect. Don't screw it up. You know, and he goes, really? There's nobody in front of me? You bet.
Well, do you need a break? Or are you good to go?
No, I'm all right.
He never gets out of the car, folks. So we're right back. We're right back with Johnny Johnson at Chennett Legacy Lodge. It's a beautiful sunny morning here. We've got the breeze blowing, having a good time. I've got a little Fortaleza in my coffee. And Johnny, tell me about Bobby Farrow. He's a guy that's like disappeared. He's a legend.
He
was fast as F.
Had a skiing accident.
And where did he go?
He had a skiing accident. It's got a plate in his head. Right after like 75 or 6 or somewhere in there. And then he's back running sprint cars now.
Wow.
I saw him last Nora 1000 over there, and we bullshitted and talked. And then we have the Mexican government put a Hall of Fame plaques in the ground for all the overall winners.
Right.
So he showed up for that, so we could take our picture with it.
Here at Slow Baja, we can't wait to drive our old Land Cruiser south of the border. And when we go, we'll be going with Baja Bound Insurance. Their website's fast and easy to use. Check them out at BajaBound.com. That's BajaBound.com, serving Mexico travelers since 1994. What was it like being with Parnelli Jones?
He's an ornery little bastard. I got a Parnelli story that you won't believe.
Let's go. Tell me Parnelli Jones stories.
I'm driving, me and Bob Gordon, Parnelli Jones, the BFG Blazer. And then Scoo Vessels got the other one. Him and our car are going to run class two. So we took the seat out and put a big toolbox in. We're going to run class one so we don't have to race each other. And it's the same thing again. Let me go first and I'm not going to hurt the car. This thing, the problem was only a 33-inch tire, and it had 600 and some horsepower. Jesus. And if you jerk the four barrel at 100 miles an hour, the rear wheels start spinning, you know, if you weren't smooth. You know, so it was like, I was coming around the corner, and I'd drift this way, and there was about 3 drifts, and I'd go straight down the road. And then I got closer to Trinidad, and I did a perfect two. He says, I'm getting this. You know, I'm getting the slide of this thing. And pull into the BF Goodrich Pit, Valley Trinidad. And that was only 58 miles, I think. And Parnelli Jones comes over, takes the net down, drops it, reaches in and grabs me by the neck and starts shaking me. He says, I need your full attention. I Wow, you got dude. It. You got it.
You got my full attention, buddy.
Yeah. And he goes, John, you have cord showing all the way around both rear tires. Put it in drive and quit having so much fun. I knew exactly what he was talking about. You know? And he says, you got to go 72 miles to San Felipe now.
Yeah.
And I says, okay. I left there and I get to San Felipe. I see him walking around the car and he comes over to me and he smiles and he goes, you listen to me. He says, yeah.
Wow.
I don't want to be out there changing tires. I've only got one spare and I burned two of them up.
So let's talk about that again. Getting back to respect for people who did, who are true top level craftsmen in your field, in your craft. And he did it on pavement at Indy.
Stock car sprint cars.
What I think an off-road racer like you could drive anything else. You could drive anything on a pavement and be fine.
Once you get practice laps in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like exactly. Yeah. You could drive anything.
Bondurant School taught us that, is that I went to Bondurant School for the main purpose. I laid into a corner on the pavement. Where do I just fly off? I don't know that in my brain. Where do I just go out into the desert? Where does it just skid? You know, and I'm terrified of that. And the last day,
he's terrified of something.
Yeah, coming around turn six there, at Sears Point, I would just lay it in there too hard and get on the gas and burn rubber all the way around the turn.
The big sweeper.
Holding a slide.
The big sweeper, yeah.
The big sweeper slide. I did that about three times, and the instructor put somebody's hand. You know, I mean, you got to stop the next lap. And he goes, you know, that's not the fastest way around that turn. I says, I know, but I'm trying to get rid of my fear of where I'm going to fly off the road. Because all there was grass there. If I came off the road, I was just going to go out into a mowed grass. You know? And he goes, oh, well, go knock your lights out then.
Well, hey, and what I was trying to say is, I think, this is my opinion, I think you could do anything Sterling Moss could do. But I don't know if Sterling Moss could come into the desert and race off-road. I think that what you guys did, and I think it took Parnelli a long effing time to just have enough respect for how demanding the desert is.
I asked Parnelli, I said, Parnelli, why don't you just slow down 5% and nobody can beat you? He goes, that's no fun.
Well, maybe that's the great answer.
You know, okay, that's not why I'm here, you know. And then, but then he did. And the cars got a little better. And he got not ripping the rear tires off Big Ole. And so it was good. But he, where was I going with that point?
You're telling me about Parnelli and just not having the patience for the desert.
And I believe in the old days you had to be a mechanic.
For sure.
You had to know how to fix that wheel, because there's nobody else around.
Right.
You know, ain't nobody going to come get you. We had cards about this big. It was a white card, yellow card, and a red card. And you're in a felt pen, and you wrote on it. And white was, I'm broke down, but I'm going to get going.
These are stuck cards.
Yeah.
These are the famed stuck cards that you handed to somebody who passed you to
and
turn
they had
in
to. They had to take it or they'd be disqualified.
And this was the system of communication in the old days where you'd hand a card to somebody and say, this is where I'm broke down.
And then the yellow one was, I'm broke down, but I'm going to need a tow out. I can't get out on my own, you know. And then the red one was medical emergency.
Jesus, imagine that kind of system. You're handing off a card and we got a medical emergency. When's somebody going to come for that?
My wife, she has a driving suit that would be worth $1 million if we could find it today. But she's riding in the 1,000 with me. And she goes, oh, there's a friend of mine. And she just writes it on her driving suit. And shit, on the highway, they were just cars stacked up. Probably 50 of them all blew up before they ever get to Kamloops. They're not used to going down the highway. And then, so she drew a line, check one, Kamloops. Then put all these cars, drew a line at Rosario. And on down, San Inez. And
the whole history of the 1000 on her thigh.
Driving suit.
On her driving suit.
Went all the way down that one, started about El Arco on this side. But now we're getting fewer cars, bro, they're running. And she gets down there, score. Communication board was blank. They had ham radios that were trying to get through that really weren't getting through, that the ham radios were at each checkpoint. And that's how they were going to, stuck stubs were going to get relayed. But the atmospheres or whatever.
Never happened.
It wasn't happening. Somebody says, Linda, have you seen Bobby, my friend? She goes, oh, let me see. What was his number? And she looks down, she goes, oh, yeah, he's just right at El Zaro, broke down. And about 50 women see this, and they mobbed her. And it was like, whoa, we had to put it all in a line.
Yeah.
To asking questions where the
car was. One at a time. One question at a time, please.
And it was like, holy shit, nobody's got a record like this. And finally, I said, wait a minute, I got a better idea. Let's go to the car and take off your driving suit and put on your clothes, and we'll hang the driving suit on the wall, on the board.
And so people can come without her having to without her having to interpret.
Yeah, getting grabbed, and that worked wonderful. The next day, the driving suit was gone.
I wonder where that is.
Yeah.
Well, you brought up George Plimpton. And I'd love to get into that, and I think we'll be working towards a wrap-up here, but that must have been absolutely something. So you race your first off-road race in 68. You did the Nora in 68. So that's the second year. And by then, it's Wide World of Sports, it's big time, and you're in it.
Well, I started out with a silver spoon in my mouth. I won the 68,000. Had to drive the goddamn race car home on the race course with the cylinders puffing oil and shit. Never thought how I was going to get the car home. And Mickey Thompson loaned me $100 for gas to come home on. And I tell my wife, I says, let's go run them in for 100 in Vegas, just see how we do. We didn't even have a spare tire. No shocks, no spindles, no nothing. Just our Corvair buggy unloaded off the trailer and win the thing overall. Win $10,000 again. Oh, first one we paid $10,000.
Jesus.
It's 68.
Big money. That's a house.
Yeah.
You could buy a house.
Oh, yeah. And then so 3 months later, I backed it up with the men for 100 overall win. And that was $10,000. So I built a pre-runner to come learn Mexico. It's still the Automobile Club map. And won the 69,000. So it was like, okay, I won 30,000 on 1 year. I was making 6,000 working. I was buying my own house, building my buggy. I had a camper on my truck and a trailer. No problem, all in 6,000. So to get 30,000, it was like, whoa, I think time to look serious into this.
Hey, can you talk a little bit about, I think you told me as we were just having a little fortaleza in the beginning here before we got taping, about your wife and about, did you say 45 Baja victories and 35 she was with you, or 45 victories and 35 she was
probably ran around 50 and we won 40 to 45.
And she's navigating for you. She's in the car with you.
Or just help her. There was no GPSs, no course. She would look at ribbons and stuff.
Can you tell me a little bit about the prep you did? I think it involved tape and a Vaseline and a few other things you were telling me about before we started rolling here.
Well, any woman that seriously wants to go off-road racing got to tape up her boobs. You put her T-shirt on and good old duct tape. Tie them suckers up. Put another shirt on, put your driving suit on, and everybody just thinks you're flat.
That's before there were sports bras. So
there was no
tape
sports
down,
bra.
Baby.
Any part that was going to chafe in a single-seater, I'd take a towel and fold it six times and put it under my seatbelt, tighten it up to keep the seatbelt from cutting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you were going too slow. You know, but as soon as it gets rough and everybody starts whining, they all slow down. You know.
Tricks of the trade.
Malcolm Smith. I was complaining about Barstow. That one section around, just terrible. I hated that section. And he goes, "No, John, that you should love that section because everybody else hates it. That's when you just blew right on through them." And I remembered that for 50 years.
So you got towels, you got Vaseline for chafing parts. What other tricks in the trade?
If it's in a truck, you need to wear a hard sole shoe so that it didn't get hot. Because the floor got hot.
So with the floor get hot from the headers and, yeah, and the engine.
Never change gears, shift while going through a silt bed.
Just
if you open the clutch up, it gets that talcum in there, and your clutch is gone.
We're getting tips right here, folks.
Yeah. That one's not well known.
Never shift in a silt bed.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a legend, Malcolm Smith, motorcycle racer extraordinaire, moved to cars, 173 with Bud Fellkamp. What do you have to say about Malcolm?
Oh, I love the guy. We get along great. I mean, it's just sad for me to see him. He's got like Parkinson's or something now. And God, I went into the dealership a couple years ago, and his son is identical looking to him. I'm identical,
Alexander.
And I'm going,
yeah.
Are you taking anti-aging pills? You know?
Yeah. How about Bud Fellkamp? You got anything nice to tell me about Bud Fellkamp?
Don't know him that well.
All right. He's been around the sport a long
time.
Yeah, he raced with Malcolm.
Yeah.
So let me ask you about your friends. Who do you see? You've been around this sport and around this desert, around Baja for a long time. Tell me about a couple of friends you've made.
Oh, just here I wind up 10 or 15 every time I walk in, you know, of friends.
At the Chenith Lodge.
Yeah.
Yeah. People were asking about you last night. They thought you had gone to the States.
Yeah.
They were wondering where you were.
Yeah, because I'm not usually sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, Johnny, it's been a damn fun time getting to know you a little bit, talking to you.
Here's a good story you'll love. In 68, after San Ignacio, you've got all these lagoons, or you can take the mountain route. And it's an hour longer to take the mountain route. But you're not going to get lost.
Or stuck. Or stuck in the mud.
So I go, well, I've never been to Baja, so I'm going to take the mountain route. Well, then, tell me, it's the siltiest damn spot I've ever made. Chapala look like a piece of cake. And I'm plowing through silt, and all of a sudden I go off a creek bit and hit the other side, and it goes boom, and the front end lands there, and the motor lands on the bank, and both rear wheels are sitting there in the air just spinning. And here's a 3,000-pound dead weight, no suspension car. And we look at that, got a regular bumper jack. Get out, jacked it all the way in the sand. They got out, took the spare tire off, and jacked it all the way in the silt. And I'm going, me and Paul Swab were looking at each other, what do we do now? We couldn't even wiggle it, not even a rock. And all of a sudden he goes, and we look up, and here's three horsemen, all got a Corona beer drinking, their cowboy hats on, just watching us. And they're going, and we don't speak any Spanish. And and they all laughed. They went around the front, threw us a lariat, put it over the shock tower, and they yanked me just hard enough that the motor fell into the canyon. And then I could drive, got sideways, and got out of there. But right,
me?
This is the, I haven't seen a person or a house in 150 miles, you know, and all of a sudden, here's three cowboys sitting right there.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Hey, one of the things I've always been fascinated about is your experience with George Plimpton. Again, he's a legend already for being the everyman doing these everyman things.
Right.
And for however it came to him to do a thing on racing, behind George Plimpton behind the wheel, he's in Monaco, he's in England, he's hobnobbing with Jackie Stewart,
yeah,
frickin' royalty, who's leaving
a yeah, riding in a helicopter to the race with him, you know.
And then he gets over to La Mesa, California, or Spring Valley, and sees you and your wife in your humble garage. And it was
Well, I'm off to Baja now. I'm going to be my ride.
And it was a beautiful contrast of what it's like to race at the highest level of Formula One.
We go over to Wells there, where I'm run around. This is where I'm going to get my driving lessons. And then we run around a little bit, and then I let him drive, and he runs around a little bit. And he's just all stoked because he didn't expect it to have much power. And I don't know if you know Okatu Wells or not out in the desert.
Not at all.
But it's got one big, huge sand hill that's hard. And then over here, there was a little sand spit coming down. And I'd run up there. And they had put the cameras there, and I came down at like 50 miles an hour down this little narrow sand spit. And they went, whoa, look at that. But so then they go to my garage, and then we go to Baja. Oh, then we went to the pre-run. They built, Gil George Funko built a duplicate-looking car to mine that had a camera mount, 4-inch square tubing off the front and both sides. Because there were 16-millimeter projectors.
Crazy.
And we stayed the whole day at Chapala filming. And the cameraman would be out in front, and George would be driving across the dry lake, you know. And with a big cloud behind you, you know, it looked really good. And then that's where the side pictures came, too.
And what did that do for you? I mean, to have George Plimpton in your car.
I didn't realize that he was that big of a deal at that time.
He was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
He was kind of a big deal, Johnny.
But, yeah.
I think he just chose you for a beautiful wife.
Yeah. Well, no. You know why they chose me? They didn't want the special to be a Chevrolet special or a Ford special. Okay. And I had just won the 1,003 years in a row in a buggy.
It's a good bet. You're a good bet.
So, yeah, this was a good bet. And so then they picked up Parnelli and all them on the team. We had four cars. In case we broke it, they would continue the special. Yeah. So.
Amazing stuff. Well, let's wrap it up. How do you explain Baja to people?
You got to go slow. You got to slow down. It takes 2 weeks to get here to slow down. You're running around trying to fix everything on your house in 2 weeks. No, it's not. It'll get done. Mañana doesn't mean tomorrow. And then you can start enjoying it. Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first. You heard it here first. Let me get the Fortaleza off my tongue. You heard it here first. Johnny Johnson says, how do you explain Baja to people? You got to slow down. We're going to leave it right there. Thank you, Johnny. That was awesome.
My pleasure.
Wow. Hope you enjoyed that. Johnny Johnson under a palapa in Persibu at the Chenith Legacy Lodge. 112 career off-road racing victories. He was at the 1968 Nora Mexican 1000, featured on ABC Wide World of Sports with George Plimpton. Come on. Come on. Well, we're at the Nora Mexican 1000 right now. I'm leading the Slow Baja Safari class. This is the best, mostest, funnest, happiest race on earth, and we are the happiest class in that race, and I've got some folks to thank for that. Baja Bound, you know I can't do it without them. Baja Bound, Tequila Fortaleza. If you can't find Tequila Fortaleza at your local retailer, it's because I am pouring it all right now in Mexico. Thank you, Billy. Thank you, Guillermo. Nomad Wheels, new sponsor. So stoked to have some Nomad 501s on the truck. They look great. Check them out. Nomad wheels. Benchmark Maps, they're back. That's right, I've got a Benchmark Road and Recreation Atlas. That's right, I've got the map in my lap. We may have a GPS on because we have to, but you know we've got that Benchmark map in our lap. I'm not going to waste any more of your time. You know, I got to tell you about Mary McGee's pal, Steve McQueen. Yeah, he loved Baja. You know what he said? He said, "Hey, McGee, you got to get off that pansy road racer and get out to the desert with me." Yeah, that's what he said if you listen to the podcast. New Year's Eve, 1962, that's right. Now, Steve McQueen, he loved Baja, and he said, "Baja's life. Anything that happens before or after is just waiting."